Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, Caleb Patterson, P4P Real Talk, Midwest Muscle in the history. Oh yeah. And this program is sponsored by P4P Muscles. Yeah, you got them. I do too. The number one drug-free sponsorship foundation in the wizard world. That would be Hogwarts, but not really. In the real world, too. And if you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on and a vehicle to drive your goals, like what, Des?
Like a Mack truck through ice cream.
Sounds like strawberry today. Check us out at p4pmuscle.com. And now let's talk about ice cream. No, I'm serious. No. We're going to talk about everything else but ice cream. How you doing, Des?
I am awesome. You know, I had a little bit of a stressful day today, but now that I'm here with you and our first guest, I am just doing so much better. Fantabulous.
Roll call.
Stress of the day melted away. Roll call. That's right. You guys have missed it. We've had so many interviews that have just been just filling our calendar, which is awesome. I'd rather have that going on than not, but we haven't had as many roll call guests as we would have liked, and so now we are back on track, and we're coming back with a vengeance. We've got two great guests tonight. We have one natural bodybuilding pro and one OCR athlete, and OCR stands for obstacle. There
okay.
We go. Obstacle course race. So we have an obstacle course racer that's going to be on with us tonight, too. So that will be very interesting. But with
intriguing.
That, Kaylin, huh?
I said, and intriguing.
and what he just said. Why don't
intriguing.
You go ahead and set our first up guest for us, a little, our first guest up for us tonight?
Well, this young man, I had the pleasure to meet at a past show, and he was one of those where you should actually look at and say, yeah, he's going to make it. And it's not just the bucket list for him. This is something that he's very passionate about and takes very seriously. And the reason I say that is because not only was he there to compete, but he was there to learn. And that's very important when you talk about competition, because when you're truly sincere about it, you don't mind having flaws. And you don't mind correcting them. And that's one of the blessings of this sport, is that you get a chance, as many chances as you want, because you're willing to take it and improve. And with the way he was asking the questions, they weren't structured basically to have a response. You could see him looking in his mind's eye to figure out a way to make those changes happen. And that's always a blessing when you're talking about somebody that's really serious about the sport and it's going to improve it. So I'll say hi to Matt, and I'll let him introduce himself, and we'll go from there.
Kaylin, before I introduce myself, I had that surprise, and I'm absolutely flattered that you remembered that we, back in June of 2015, we stood on stage right next to each other down at the Titan Classic in Urbandale. And
mm-hmm.
that was my surprise I had alluded to before, where I was going to say, that was my very first show, my debut, and I learned that day that it's not just about the personal side of the sport, especially in the NGA. It's also about sportsmanship on stage, and it's not just about the individual, but it's about the group as a whole. Real quick, first show, nervous as all heck. And you're helping me out the whole time, you know, step forward. And I couldn't, the PA system at Urbandale wasn't the best for the athletes, and I couldn't hear half of the poses that were being called. And you guys were on stage helping me out the whole time. So it was a wonderful first experience, and that I have taken that to every single show since that very first one. So if I could give you a round of applause, I would right now, but I don't want to make it too loud on the phone. yeah, it was a wonderful experience. So pat yourself on the back on that one. You inspired me to make sure that when I'm on stage with other guys, that it's the same type of a sportsmanship or classy atmosphere where it's not just about me individually, it's about the whole group up there. So.
Well, I got goosebumps on that one. Wow, yeah. I'll pass that one to Dez. I'm speechless right now.
Well, I just think that's pretty awesome. And, you know, and so this is such a small world. Not too long ago, it was last year, Kaylin and I were getting ready to do a show about an Illinois show. And we were both at that same show and didn't even realize it. And now I'm realizing that all three of us were at the 2013 Titan Classic, and I would not have even known that you guys were there. But it was only my second show of my competition career. So that's just a little crazy, but that's awesome. So Matt, and this is Matt Murawski, for anybody who didn't catch the full name, go ahead and finish introducing yourself. We haven't gotten that far yet.
I kind of went off format there, but I had to get that off my chest first. I've been waiting to
do
that.
No, that's awesome.
Anyway, yeah, my name is Matt Murawski. Short, sweet, and to the point, I've always wanted to be a competitive bodybuilder ever since I was a child. And, I did the whole football thing, started lifting weights. And it wasn't until I was in my, my mid-20s, late-20s, when lifting weights alone wasn't doing it anymore, when I really started to do a lot of research with the dieting side and the nutrition side. And back when I was in middle high school in that range, we didn't have – the internet really wasn't what it is today. And so you're really limited on what you could do and what tools you had available to you. So I took it upon myself when I was in my mid to late 20s to just start researching like crazy. What could I do dieting and nutrition wise? And then I want to say it was about 2010. At the end of 2010, I just said, you know what? I'm going to go that route with the New Year's resolution. I want to find out, can I do this for 16 weeks? Can I hack a competitive bodybuilding type prep? So I just prepped to prep that year. And after 16 weeks, I was pleasantly surprised with the results. And that's when I first said, you know what, I've got a long way to go and I've got a lot of work to do. I think I can do this. And that's when I really started to do it. And as life typically throws curveballs your way, I was approached about playing football again. And typically in the semi-professional leagues, offensive linemen are heavily needed because people just don't want to play that position. So I ended up over the next year and a half, I ended up going the exact opposite route with what I had learned dieting and nutrition-wise to put on was about 130 pounds. And so I got up to about 350, and it was a good-looking 350 for 350 pounds. I eventually, after playing for a few years at the semi-pro level, I said, you know what, here's my shot. I want to see if I have what it takes to go at the pro level. And I ended up landing a couple of professional indoor contracts. Wasn't really happy with myself. Wasn't happy with the way I looked. The money's, it's not great when you get to the low tier professional level. It's not like the NFL where you're landing six figures or seven figures. You're just playing for maybe a shot at the next level, but more for a love of the game. And after a little bit, I had said to myself, you know what, I'd always asked, where could I go with football? And I found out, and I was really happy with that. So I put that away, and I put it to bed, and that's when I got started cutting off all that weight. And it took about 16 months, but I went from 350 down to about when I went to the Titan Classic in Urbandale in 2015, I had cut down to 236. And even though I had lost all that weight, I wasn't there yet. Even though I had lost an immense amount of body fat and weight and I looked okay, which the only goal for that show was to look presentable, in all aspects, not look like a joke on stage. My skin still had some places it needed to go. And that ever since then has been kind of my personal struggle. Improving in the look, improving in posing, but just being very patient with the skin. And my own personal struggle with the skin, I had a lot of people tell me, you know, especially in my midsection, that's going to be there for the rest of your life. And I'm not one of those people that you say you can't do something because I'm going to prove you're wrong. And I'm happy to say that at the Pro Universe show last November, I finally looked in the mirror and I wasn't content with what I saw. I was happy because my lower abdomen area looked really good. The skin had finally disappeared, if you will, but it took probably about 3 years. But anyway, I keep rambling here. That's kind of an overview as to where I came from with this and how I moved throughout the sport anyway.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, a lot of perseverance in that story right there. No, sorry, Caitlin. I was just giving you a hard time about cutting in, and here I cut you off. So
I guess it's a full
circle.
That's not a surprise.
I know. But anyway, I'll just keep going because I've already started. So I'm glad you brought the Pro Universe that you were in last fall, because I was really kind of impressed with your attitude about that show and your placing there. And I would like you to share with our listeners how you placed. But then your perspective also on how you placed.
Absolutely. I have going throughout, I've only been technically competing for barely a year and a half now, from first show to now. I've learned that it's not about the judges, how the judges place you or the hardware or any of that stuff. If that person in this sport, it very soon is going to chew you up and spit you out, because eventually you're not going to place first. At the universe, I'll just flat out say it. I was dead last. I had placed dead last, and I went into that show saying, you know what, I just want, once again, it's funny how the goal for the first show. The goal was the same for the Universe show as it was for the first show when I was starting out with my debut. I don't care about how I place. I don't care what the judges say about me. I want to get on that stage, and I want people to look at me and say, he belongs here. He looks like he belongs here. And that was more important to me when I had people in the audience that had traveled down to watch say, wow, you really compared to most of those guys on that stage. You did. You deserved the invitation to come here. And that was what was important to me at the end of the day. I didn't expect the call out, and when it didn't happen, it didn't ruin my night. You learn that as you go throughout the sport. The show before that, I remember there was an athlete, and I had forgotten something. So just by chance, I after we were leaving, I went back in to go grab something that I had left in the backstage at the show. And as we were leaving, I remember there was, I won't say any names or anything, but there were family members of an athlete that were complaining about, you know, what they had placed, and they weren't happy about it, and they were vocal about it. And I remember just going, God, this is just a reminder. There's a reason why I came back here. There's a reason why I ran into this situation. And it was a reminder to me that it's not about everyone wants to go get first and win the show and get the trophy, but there's more to it than that, at least in my perspective.
Definitely. And I like the part about it where you had shared with Caitlin and I that, you know, you didn't feel like you had embarrassed yourself by showing up that day. And I think that is just so important for in mind, regardless of what phase you are, if you're amateur, if you're pro, if you just started competing or you've been competing for a long time. If you did your best and it was your best presentation, there's no reason to be embarrassed if the placings didn't turn out the way that you wanted to. Now, if you showed up and you knew that your prep wasn't what it was supposed to be and you didn't give it your all, you know, that might be a little different if you have those kind of feelings. But for any other reason, I mean, you should always be proud of what it is that you're doing if it's your best effort that you've put forth. And, you know, and even if the placements don't show it, there's no reason to feel any less than that.
And I can right on, Desi, and I can scream it till I'm blue in the face, and I just can't reach some people with this because I always get asked after a show, well, how did you do? How did you place? And I'll say, they'll say, how did you do? And I'll say, just fine. I did great. Did awesome. Did everything I wanted to do. Well, how did you place? And I hate how the outsiders will look at, you know, just that aspect alone. And if I didn't place, I didn't get called out, or I didn't place in the top three or the top five, then it was an automatic failure or it wasn't good enough. And that's not, like you had just said, that's not at all. That's not, I determine my success or my failure in this sport. And like you had just said, if I'm taking positive steps every single year, every single show, I look back and I say, I improved. I got better. That's what it's about. That's exactly what it's about. And you're right. I mean, I'll plug him real quick. John Agin's Natural Peoria Championship show. I had 12 days before the universe. I did that just as a feeler. I felt I was ready, and I didn't do so hot. And I looked at it like this. Listen, I've got 12 days until the universe. I can do one of two things. I can say, shrug my shoulders and say, hey, there's nothing I can do. I'll just show up to this show and hope for the best. Or I can get up, dust myself off, tweak some things, and really kick it in the butt over the next 12 days and see how much improvement I can make. And that was when I got down to Coral Springs. I, like you just said, I looked in the mirror the day of the show and I said, I am so freaking proud of myself. I didn't lay down and die after the disappointment at the NPC. I got up, I dusted myself off, and I worked harder than I've ever worked under adversity to get here and look so much better, even with just 12 days.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, there's so much that happens at the shows, and they don't have anything to do with the actual competition, just the people sometimes that, you know, like you said, if somebody's not really following the sport too closely, they'll miss those chances and opportunities. But I'll get back to that. We have you had spoken earlier about your skin, and I know that Ivy had sent a message, and she was talking, I mean, Ivy Potter, I'll get her whole name, it was talking about how, you know, she was going to help me get ready for stage this year. And one of the things she was talking about was the red light, and that was dealing with the loose skin. She's based in Indiana. How close are you to that?
How close am I to Indiana?
Yes.
From where I'm at right now, geographically?
Yes.
Yes.
Albert Lee is – I'm in Albert Lee, Minnesota. And Albert Lee is about go ahead.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Caitlin. I thought you said, sorry about that. I'm about 5 or 6 hours from Chicago, so probably it's a good 8-10 hour haul to, say, Indianapolis.
Okay. Well, she was, I'm sure she'll be in touch with you about something soon. But, you know, she was just, that's something that she's trying to help people with because, you know, that's a good thing you're talking about. Self-image, image on stage, and overall presentation are things that we need to consider. It's not egotistical when we talk about it. And I know some of the listeners that might fly out their head, like they think we're just speaking of ourselves in general, but not as a competitor. And these are the things we have to think about. and I don't want any of the listeners to be remiss about what's being said. It's not for ego. It is for appearance, because that's part of our scoring. So we do have to be mindful of it, and we do have to be mindful of the presentation we bring to the stage. And as Dan had said earlier, you know, you don't want to disrespect the stage, and you definitely don't want to disrespect the competitors that you stand beside and compete against. So these are the things that we have to think about, you know, and if we don't, then I would say then you won't be scoring too high and you won't be placing much higher either. So that was just one of the things that was considered. Another question we have is, when you said the NPC, you compete in the NPC as well, or are you just a natural?
No.
Sorry about that. No, it's not the NPC, the organization. I should have. It's the Natural Peoria Championship show inside of the NGA. I've always referred to it as the NPC for short. But no, it's not the organization. It's a show in Peoria, Illinois.
But I've made that same mistake. I remember in speaking with Jonathan, because we had him on the show last fall, and he was talking about the web address for the show, and it was NPC that something, and I'm like, wow, that's like, what, where are you sending us? But it was for Natural Peoria Championship, so.
I think, I believe it was NPC, NPC NGA is what it was, .com.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was. But the only thing that stuck in my head was NPC, and I was like.
And I apologize for the confusion there. I had said to myself before, I was like, don't refer to as the NPC, refer to the whole thing, because that there's that confusion. Mm-hmm. So my apologies about that.
Hey, no worries. No worries. He's 100% natural, folks. That's why we have him on the show.
I'm polygraph tested 7 years. I've got the certificate to prove it.
There you go.
Polygraph tested and urine test approved. He's got it.
And mother
approved. Got it. There you go. So one of the other things you had shared with Kaylin and I is that one of the things you love most about natural bodybuilding is the inspiration and motivation that come along with it. You know, even though you started competing for your own personal reasons, you have a much different reason for continuing to compete. And can you elaborate a little bit on that for us?
Absolutely, yeah. When I first started, like you just said, it was for my own personal reasons. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to lose all that football weight. I wanted to get back into something that I was comfortable looking at again. And then I've always just wanted to do it, and just even just one show, just to see what it would be like. And as I went throughout that process, you know, with social media being what it is today, Facebook, I've gotten on some of the other stuff, but I'm typically on Facebook the most. A lot of people begin, I without even really knowing it or even making an attempt to go this route, I started to gain kind of a following, and a lot of people began telling me things like, hey man, you motivate me to do better things with my life, or you've inspired me to do this, or and so on and so forth. And it's as I go throughout this process, I find more and more that I'm doing it to help motivate and inspire other people to do great things with their life. And it doesn't even have to be a fitness type oriented thing. It can be anything. And I find that keeps my glass full, and we have our down days too. And when people tell me things like that, that picks me up and helps motivate me and inspire me to move forward. I love to tell people all the time that my biggest thing is, don't be closed-minded. Don't sell yourself short, and think outside the box. If you can do whatever you want to do, and never let somebody or another person dictate to you what you can or can't do in life. Do whatever you want to do, but you've got to open your mind up and open the parameters of your mind up to believe that you can. You know how many people told me when I was. You're talking late 20s, early 30s, when I was talking about maybe trying out for some pro football teams. you're too old. You can't do that. And it, like I just said, if you tell me I can't do something, I'm gonna be held bound and determined to prove you wrong. And it's the same thing, you know, when I started natural bodybuilding, how many people have told me, you know, you're never going to get rid of that loose skin. That's going to be there for the rest of your life. And I'm like, you know what? Thanks for motivating me to get rid of this stuff and to keep pushing on it. But yeah, I find that it's the motivating and the inspiring of others to do great things with their lives, which is what really fuels me at the end of the day. And that to me will ultimately always be more important than a ranking, a placing, a trophy, a medal. That's what keeps me going with the sport.
Well, there you go. You referenced the loose skin, and Ivy said that's a little bit far for you to be traveling, and she would not want that. But she's going to do some checking up for you and make sure that she said there should be someone in your area, and she's going to look into that, and she's going to message you personally, okay?
Hey, I'll just say right here, right now, thank you very much. That from the bottom of my heart, that is that above and beyond what I would have expected. So thank you so much.
Not a problem. And I can tell you that Ivy has just as much passion for this sport as any competitor. And she's one of the best examples, along with Andrea Castillo, to where, you know, they don't have to be on stage to share the passion and the love that we do. You know, Andrea has her husband, and Ivy has her kids. And Des has this T-shirt that she once made that really shows how passionate that all of us are.
Yes, that'll be a conversation for another time as we're running out of time. I can't believe it. This half hour went so fast. So, Matthew, thanks so much for joining us. But before we transition, I know, it's sad. We're going to have him back. But before we transition, we'd like to give you the chance to give some shout-outs to anyone and everyone who has been with you so far on your bodybuilding journey.
Absolutely, and I'll keep this once again short because I tend to ramble. I'll keep this short, sweet, and to the point. There are too many names. There are too many names. I will forget somebody. I won't be able to get everybody in. So I'm just going to keep it to two things. First shout out is to every single person that has in some way, shape or form, all the way from a simple, a like on Facebook, all the way up to going through this process with me on a daily basis and putting up with me. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. This is why I say Team Murawski, the team comes before my name, because I can't do this without you. You guys are the safety net that keeps me in line and catches me when I do fall down, because we all fall down. It's the difference between success or failure in anything in life are those that get back on the horse after they've fallen off. And the second shout out is to both you guys for having me on the show. I absolutely flattered you guys that asked me to be on the show. So that's my second shout out to both Desi and Kaylin.
Thank you so much. The privilege has
been
all
guys.
Ours. Trust us. So you have a fantastic evening, and we'll be watching you. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
Kind of sounds like a creeper there, Des. We'll be watching you.
Thanks for pointing that out, Kaylin. Now everybody knows. We'll be watching him on a stage. Somewhere on a pro stage somewhere in 2017, or at least we hope. I wish we would have had a chance to ask him that question. So we'll have to do some follow-up, and maybe we'll have an answer for our listeners on our next show. But for now, I want to go ahead and set up our next guest. His name is Jason Silva, and he is an obstacle course racer. I'm not even sure if that is the correct term, but that's how I'm going to use OCR. Hey, Jason, welcome to P4P Real Talk.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Not too bad.
It's good. So excited you could actually join us. I know you were a little bit nervous, but I also know you are going to be absolutely fantastic on the show. So we are about, you know, natural bodybuilding for the most part, but being sponsored by P4P, the P4P Roll Call, it's our mission to try and interview every P4P athlete that we can. And, of course, P4P sponsors a wide variety of natural athletes, and you happen to be our first OCR athlete, hopefully not our last. So we don't know a whole lot about the sport. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the sport and about how you became involved as an athlete?
Cool. Again, I appreciate, you know, the opportunity to come on with you guys. I was, you know, nervous all week kind of thinking about how this would go. And it's exciting. The sport is growing, you know, at a really, really high rate around the world. More and more people are becoming more aware of, you know, the sport itself. And yeah, we can go with obstacle course racer. That works. You know, there's a lot of different circuits that are out there. So basically a couple of years ago, I was not really happy with my situation as far as my weight goes and where I was in life as far as my fitness level goes. I grew up playing sports and played soccer in college and in high school and kind of started working full-time and things kind of got away from me. So one night in January, a friend of mine and I were going out to get sushi and she said, "Hey, like, this thing looks pretty cool. It's Spartan Race. We should try it." And, you know, a lot of people have heard of Tough Mudder. That's one of the really big names, you know, at least when I started was one of the big names out there. But Spartan Race has now, you know, kind of shown to the forefront of that. And I was like, yeah, let's try one of these things out. Cool. So I started training and was really, you know, getting into the gym every day as much as I could, you know, 5-6 days a week to get there and lost about 45 pounds to kind of get ready for this first race and got out there and had no idea what I had gotten myself into once I was out there. I literally finished the race and, you know, looked at my girlfriend at the time and was like, "I don't know why I did that. Like, that was crazy. I don't, why would anybody sign up to do this?" So of course I went home and signed up for 9 more that year. And now I've gotten through 49 races. So this year we'll start up my third year of this. And it's huge. And it's awesome to the camaraderie and the family atmosphere that you get out there. I mean, one of the things I love most about it is the fact that you can get out on the course and you could be with some of the best athletes in the world. And when I started, I was running in the open class of just everybody that's trying it out and doesn't really know what they want to do with it. I've had, you know, a lot of opportunity to run with a lot of people out there and met some really great people. Kind of how I got in with P4P and where that kind of came from was Dave Leggett, who I've talked to a little bit earlier today. That's right. Yeah, he's a P4P athlete also, and he and I met literally on the side of a mountain carrying sandbags up and down the mountain. And the funny thing is, at the time I worked in retail. I worked for Oakley, and I had actually met his mom and dad before I had met him. They came in shopping for stuff for him. And then we're literally walking up the side of a mountain with sandbags. I'm like, "Hey, I know you. I've seen you on social media." And you know, we kind of kicked it off from there and got talking a lot about it. So it's awesome. I mean, it's something that everybody has to try at one point or another. You guys got to get out there.
Well, you know, I've actually done a Tough Mudder. So I did a Tough Mudder in 2012 before I started competing. So right after
the PG show.
I'm sorry. But so when I finished training for that race, and I have to say the term we throw around a lot sometimes on our show is a bucket lister, basically someone who does something just to cross it off their list. I was a bucket lister for the OCR because I did it, and I wouldn't say I was fantastic, but I wasn't last either. So that was a huge win for me. But, yeah, I was kind of like Yeah, I'm good. I did it. I got my headband, donated some shoes, and I was good with that. But it was a great experience. Helped me overcome some fear with water. I'm not a very strong swimmer at all, so the obstacle courses with water were a little bit challenging for me. But I would have to say some of my favorite obstacles of that race were ones with water. I think especially the one where we were on some, you know, ungodly high platform and you had to jump down into this what seemed like a little puddle, but it wasn't. It was much deeper than that, but it was kind of crazy, but totally loved it. So anyway, I digress. I know Kalen has some great questions for you, so I'll turn it back over to him.
Really?
Yeah. There you go. Hand off.
Oh, that is so sweet. Well, my thing, because, you know, I play sports year-round, and one of the hardest things for me, especially with the amount of races you talk about doing, finding a way to actually recover. Because, you know, people don't really think about that when they talk about actually competing. They just think about the actual race or the actual event or what they're actually doing at that time, but they never think about the time it takes to actually recover from that, because that's a lot of calories consumed, and your body has to basically get ready for another one. And how do you manage that alone?
So, I mean, honestly, it was definitely hard to do the year. So, like I said, this is my third year going into it. 2014 was kind of spread out a little bit, so I didn't have too much to worry about. So mm-hmm. if anybody that's not is not familiar with Spartan Race, one of the big achievements is a trifecta. So Spartan offers three different distances. They all offer multiple different ones, but the three basic distances are the sprint, a super, and a beast. And if you complete all three distances, you get a piece of a medal that fits together to make a large medal. So
oh.
I got one. My first year, I got two. And once you complete more than one, you actually get a special medal that signifies, you know, doing multiple. So the first year I got two, and I was like, oh, this is really cool. I got three, actually, the first year. And I told my wife, I was like, I want to do six. I want to double it. And she's like, you're out of your mind. Like, that's just not, that's ridiculous. So we sit down and honestly, as far as recovery process and the training for it, almost as nerve wracking as planning all of these things out. If it was not for her being able to like spreadsheet anything out, I would definitely have been in big trouble. But we literally, you know, I was racing once or twice a month and, you know, they happen on weekends. So it was basically race, and then the week in between was just consume and rest and kind of go from there. And thankfully, I made it out of that season without too many bumps or bruises and no injuries. Last year, unfortunately, I did not have the same success, and it really does take a toll on your body. That's why, you know, a lot of my training has to happen between November when the season ends and March when the season starts, because once the season starts, I really don't get a lot of time to put myself through heavy workouts. You know, it's more of just continuing to run and keeping up mm-hmm. with that fitness level. But I discovered last year cryotherapy, which has been pretty cool and has definitely helped with the recovery process. So I know a lot of us that run regularly are always looking for new ways to try and quick recover or find ways to heal up a little bit faster to be able to get back out on the mountain or, you know, stadium race, whatever it is.
Now, I find that interesting that you bring that up. And I actually have two questions for you, one of them from a listener. But before we get to that one real quick, so cryotherapy, because I have seen some posts of bodybuilders who have had injuries that have taken part in cryotherapy, but I've never really understood or looked into exactly what that is. Can you explain a little bit about what it is and how it helps your body to mend?
Sure. So I could do my best. I am by no means a scientist or certified to deal in that business at all. But basically you get into a chamber. It's usually about 3 minutes is what they'll put you in there. The temperature goes down to, you know, negative 200 degrees almost sometimes. And you're in there for 3 minutes, and it basically slows down the swelling process in your muscles.
Yes.
And by taking all of the blood flow and putting it into the, you know, to the extremities that need to keep from getting frostbite or anything like that, it kind of helps mm-hmm. keep that and everything, it keeps the blood flowing through everything. But it also speeds up your metabolism also, so you get that extra burn from calories from it. So it has some, and it has some other effects as far as health with skin and pieces like that, but it's basically just to slow down the swelling so that your body is able to recover faster. So they made a big push this year, and we're at a lot of races. They actually had, like, mobile stations out at races, so people were able to do them post-race. But it does I will say that the few times I had an opportunity to do it last year, it really made a difference. I mean, there's times I ran a race at the beginning of the year that was a 32-mile race, and at the end of that, I literally felt awful. I mean, it was awful, and got to do that, and actually, it did help for the recovery process significantly from where I thought I was going to be.
Oh, very interesting. I'll have to look more. I'm just interested to learn more about that in general. So thank you for taking a stab at answering that. Okay, the question that I have for you from one of our listeners is, what do you think about the no bell kicking policy? But before you answer what is bell kicking?
So what happens on a lot of obstacles that, and now I am pro bell kick, I will say to start. I was very upset when this policy was kind of put into place, or in my first reaction was to be upset about it. At the end of the day, it's a safety thing, and there's not a lot you can do anyway. The rules are in place, and that is. But basically, for instance, you can see on many obstacle course racers' profiles or on their pictures on Facebook or Instagram, you'll see a lot of them climbing a rope and flipped upside down and kicking the bell. So at the end of every obstacle, you have to hit a bell, and that's what signifies you completed the obstacle and you can move on to the next obstacle. So what looks extremely cool and speeds up the process a little bit is, instead of having, for instance, the rope climb is a very popular one. So for the rope climb, instead of having to climb all the way to the top, hit the bell with your hand and then climb back down, you can flip your legs up, kick the bell, and then go down. It saves you a couple extra seconds and an extra pull or two, you know, with your hands. I was not, like I said, not very excited in the beginning when it was taken away. But at the end of the day, I definitely understand the safety precautions that are there. And unfortunately, I was one of those people. The first time I saw it, I was like, oh, that's so cool. Like, I want to be able to do that. So then when I got to the point where mm-hmm. I could do it, I was like, awesome, I'm doing it. And there's definitely people out there that probably are not capable of it and try. And if you fall, you could severely hurt yourself. At the end of the day, you know, you have to understand what you're capable of doing and what your body's limitations are. But some people, you know, when you get caught in the moment, you just want to try something out and do it. So unfortunately, they removed the ability to kick the bell in most obstacles at this point. So there was a small uproar at the beginning of the year when that first went into place. And I think at the end of the day, everyone just kind of went with it. You're not going to, I wasn't going to not show up for a race because I couldn't kick a bell.
Yeah, that sounds like a spoiled sport for sure. And I'm glad you didn't take that route.
don't get me wrong. If I have an opportunity to kick one, I'm going to kick it. They tell us every once in a while it's allowed still, and we'll make it happen. But it's all fun.
Wow. Yeah. I'm just trying to picture that, and I can see why they would have such safety concerns. Because you know, a lot of people look like they're doing well with the maneuver, but as soon as that equilibrium pitches, it seems like everything changes in a really big hurry.
Sure, absolutely.
So when you're having these times, how do you gauge on when to turn it on, when you can, like, back it down? Because, you know, it's an intense run. But there's got to be a part where you either, like Dez likes to say, get in that zone, and then there's got to be parts where you have to basically turn it up. When do you know to make that happen?
I mean, I think, you know, for me, when I'm out on the course, you don't know. One of the things that they like to do is you know that a race could be in a certain distance range. You don't know how far it is until you've completed the race. You know, the difference in if you're going out and you're running a marathon and it's 26 miles, you know how to pace yourself for 26 miles and you know where you are. When you could go out for one of these races, it could range anywhere from, you know, the longest distance could range anywhere from 13 to 17 miles, depending on, you know, the elevation and other factors that they take into the course. I mean, at the end of the day, I push myself, and if I can keep going, I'll keep going. And, you know, I wear a heart rate monitor, so I know, you know, when I get to the point where, and I train enough to listen to my body and know what my body can and cannot handle. So I really, you know, I go full throttle until I feel like it's going to be, you know, an issue, and then you back down. A lot of the times I'll save it for places in a race where I know that I'm not going to be able to, you know, I'm not my strongest. So there are obstacles where I don't like some obstacles, and I don't look forward to them at all. Those are obstacles where you just kind of dig deep and take your time and get through so you don't mess up. And then when I get out of that obstacle, I'll take off and go for it. We did a race, you know, in South Carolina was my last race of this last season, and it was a lot of running. So that was something that I excel in. And once I got done a couple of obstacles, I just took off and go hard until you can't go anymore, basically.
So, you know, we're going to ask, what are the obstacles that you don't like?
There are two obstacles that I'm not a big fan of. One, I'm pretty sure no one really enjoys, which is the spear throw. Anybody that's run a Spartan race before, it's literally it's a very daunting obstacle. It does not require any skill for the most part. I'm not going to say you cannot practice it, but at the end of the day, there are so many things that could go wrong or right with it, but it is literally just throwing a spear at a bale of hay and you hope it sticks.
I'm sorry.
So I will tell you that my first year running races, I ran 9 races my first year. I did not hit one spear. I came home. I built 4 spears. I bought a couple bales of hay. I stuck them in the backyard and proceeded to miss every single spear I ever threw at that stupid thing. So I was like, okay, well, it is what it is. I guess so anytime you fail an obstacle, the penalty is 30 burpees. So I'm just going to face the music, and I'm doing 30 burpees every time I get to that obstacle, clearly. I've practiced it long enough that at this point now I'm pretty confident I get to it, and as long as you can control your heart rate, kind of slow yourself down, you can kind of focus on it. And I was significantly more successful this year than I've ever been. But at the end of the day, that obstacle is not fun for anyone. And if you've ever watched a Spartan race on TV, you'll see that even the best in the world – miss that thing sometimes. So it's just it happens to be if it's your day or not your day. The obstacle that I despise is the bucket carry. They literally give you a bucket. You walk up to a pile of gravel. You have to fill your bucket. You have to carry your bucket up the mountain, bring your bucket back down, and then unload it. It just seems like self-torture to me. I don't really look forward to getting to it because I have to do it all myself. Definitely not my strongest obstacle, so that's one that always slows me down, something that I've tried to work on, you know, at home and in the gym. Once you get out there on the mountain, it sucks. There's no good word about it. It sucks. You know, I did, at the beginning of last year, I did the Ultra Beast in New Jersey, and that was a 32-mile race.
You sound like an Ultra Beast.
No doubt.
And I got to the race, and I did the first lap of the course, and they told us, all right, the cutoff point is the bucket carry. So I was already in a bad mood. I didn't even want to go out and finish this thing. And, you know, my wife met me up in the pit and helped me get some stuff together, and she's like, you've got to go do it. I get back out there, and now I'm mad because not only am I already grumpy because I'm not doing as well as I want to do, but now I have to hurry up and get to this obstacle that I hate so that I don't have to get kicked off the course.
Wow. Wow.
So it's definitely the least favorite of any obstacle we encounter.
So you definitely put a new term to bucket list. I mean, my goodness. You're not human, man. You're not human. Oh, Dez, help me out.
I know. I'm still just in here listening, and I'm like, you know, and it's so to do an obstacle course race like I did, I mean, and then to move up to the ranks, because there are levels. You have to get, if I'm understanding correctly, some of these races you have to get invited to. You have to perform at a certain level in order to be able to compete in certain races. So, I mean, it's a sport that you have to work hard towards. And it's always growing. I mean, how big is obstacle course racing? How many people participate, do you think, in a given year?
Oh, I would say, I mean, oh God. So let's put it this way. Obstacle course racing world championships happen once a year. You have to finish in a certain percentage of your age group or your, you know, if you're running elite, in the elite class to be invited. That consists of obstacle course racers from all over the world. I would say there's probably at least 45 different companies that run these things. And in Spartan alone, I mean, you're looking at well over 65 races, 70 races probably. And each race, I would say probably anywhere from 5,000 to 8,000 people in a weekend.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's a lot of people. It's definitely, you know, one of the fastest growing sports in the world. Everyone's kind of catching on to it and trying it out, whether it's, you know, for fun. We get a lot of people out, and I am a huge advocate of it. I love running with people. I usually run, you know, on a regular mountain race, I'll get out and run the elite class first thing in the morning. And then if it's depending on the race, you know, and this year I have some friends or some staff members that work with me at my gym that are going to go out and run it also. So I'll run with them. You know, if it's a stadium race, I'll run first thing in the morning, and then I'll run with whoever's new to kind of show them how it's done or, you know, what's going on and kind of push them and motivate them. But there's always new people. You're always seeing new people talking about it. And I have a lot of friends that over the last few years have kind of jumped into it that it's, you know, made it more exciting for me because I had more people to share that with. But I mean, there's just, it's an insane amount of people that are continuously showing up to these things. And there's just more and more races. They touch so many different destinations and states and cities and locations all over the place.
So did I just hear you correctly that you'll sometimes do the same race twice in one day, once for placement and the next time around is to just run with newbies? Is that what you said? Or
yes.
Did I zone out and not get that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know,
you
how
know,
you how your body tolerates that.
There's definitely times where I'm not feeling very well at the end of those days. But, you know, it's at the end of the day, I work with a gym that, you know, we believe very much in just making sure everyone is healthy and getting more people into fitness. So if this is something, you know, I look at the end of the day, if it's a way for me to get more people out there and do things, then I'm more than happy to get out there and sacrifice a little bit of my time to make sure that somebody else is getting that experience too.
Wow.
Awesome.
I like that because, you know, I've noticed lately that In this country, it's almost considered being a rebel to be actually healthy and conscious of how you treat your own body. And
sure,
you know, even dealing with family, it seems like I'm going against the stream of life, because why would you want to do that? And I'm basically asking the same question as they do bad health. And I think that's so funny that we are so cavalier with how we treat our bodies. And I have to admit that I used to be one of them. And I say one of my mm-hmm. proudest moments when I first got my paycheck is also one of my biggest embarrassments now, when, you know, all these years later, is me having a picture with a Burger King, Wendy's, McDonald's bag, holding Kentucky Fried Chicken under one arm and churches under the other. And I said, I can't even imagine thinking about doing something like that now.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely it's a culture shock, I think, for a lot of people, and even in, you know, in a gym where we have a very high member success rate, we get a lot of people that keep up with the program. Part of the being
it's
the club culture that we
almost
kind of
like Harvard College.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of really getting everybody in that thought process. So I like to make sure that we share anything that we can. You know, social media is obviously a huge platform for people to be able to kind of share what they do and why it's important. I've been pretty lucky to be surrounded with people that have thought I was probably a bit crazy with some of the things I do, but have also, you know, jumped onto that the lifestyle, and not necessarily as far as racing or other things like that go, but just being more health conscious. I mean, my own parents, you know, not that they were unhealthy by any means, but didn't really think twice about it. And, you know, I was a huge advocate of MyFitnessPal when I first started, you know, training and working out and kind of keeping track of what I eat. And, you know, my mom uses it religiously now. My sister uses it. So it's just I think it's, you know, the more that people see it, hopefully the more that they'll start to catch on and you'll see more of it.
Amen to that. So, Jason, I have one final question for you. So Taylor and I have this ongoing dialogue about what the best P4P protein flavor is. What is your favorite? No leading him, Kaylin, but you let him answer.
I have to say, it's got to be a snickerdoodle, hands down.
No!
Sorry. It's a no-brainer, I think.
That's all right. I'll let you have it. That is Kaylin's absolute favorite too. I'm just a chocolate girl. That is my favorite. But I have to admit, I have never tried Snickerdoodle. But I just like war against the system. I like to war against the system just because I can.
Such a nice one.
Anyway, Jason, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Boy, this half hour sure shot by quickly. So was it as bad as you thought it was going to be?
Wait, hold on.
No.
Hold on.
All right.
Oh. Ivy Potter says Team Chocolate, so you're not alone.
Team Chocolate. Yes, Ivy. That's my girl. Mwah, mwah. Kisses. Anyway, so I'm glad you had fun with us tonight. Real quick, want to make sure that you get the opportunity to give shout-outs to anyone and everyone who's been part of your OCR experience.
Yeah, thank you. Again, thank you guys for having me on. It was awesome. It was definitely not as bad as I had kind of amped myself up to. I had a lot of fun with you guys. there's a lot of people that have supported me through everything, but at the end of the day, if it was not for my wife, you know, I would not be able to do anything that I do. We just got married back in August. And, you know, even last year, she helped me keep everything together so I was able to still race while we were paying for a wedding. She's always, you know, by my side and helping me do everything, whether it be literally cleaning me up after races if I'm not able to get up, peeling my socks off after they've been all muddy and dirty, and, you know, building a website for me to continue to keep track of everything. So she's been with me from the start of this and has always supported me, so.
All right. Well, hats off to Mrs. Silva. And on behalf of myself, Kaylin, Jason, Matt, and the boys at P4P Muscle, Snickerdoodle, thanks for joining us tonight. Your body is a temple, so let's build it.